Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Howdy, hour number three on this Thursday. This week is flying by, flying. What's happening? It's the Tiki and Tierney Show, CBS Sports Radio. Of course, we're coming to you from our studios here at the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Tiki Barber, Brandon Tierney. Good stuff today. AJ Hawk, Aaron Rodgers' buddy, and of course, former Packer Super Bowl champ. He stopped by. If you want to get that, Odyssey.com and the Odyssey app, just type in our name, the show name, Tiki and Tierney. YouTube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Instagram, same deal. Twitter, Tiki and Tierney. All sorts of ways to connect with the show. And, not just connect with some of the content that you may have missed or want to listen to again, but if you want to get us some thoughts. And you might want to get us some thoughts on this because, I don't know, I mean, if my team drafts a quarterback, especially if my team moves up 9 draft slots to get into a position to draft a quarterback, I think I want to see that quarterback fairly soon. Yeah. Now, obviously, it depends.
The impatient world of today's sports environment, BT.
That's true. It certainly depends on, like, who's my current starter. In the case of the Niners, Garoppolo, while he's not great, he's at least slightly above average. He's fine. He's more than passable. But this is interesting because not only are the Niners kicking the tires possibly of having Trey Lance sit for the first year, but maybe also for year two.
Yeah.
Get this from Jed York, and then obviously you and I will react. Here's the Niners CEO.
I mean, to me, like, we're investing in the long-term future of our team. You know, this Sunday, he turns 21. If he doesn't play until he's 23, you know, but he's got a 15-plus year career. I mean, you know, there were rumors about a guy, and obviously Kyle talked about trading for Aaron. How long did Aaron sit? 2-3 years before he played? And again, I want to make sure that we do everything that we can to make sure that that position is the best it can possibly be in the NFL.
Yeah, by the way, so they did tamper. More evidence. He re-references Coach talking about Rodgers and the CEO. That's Jed York saying, yeah, I mean, sure, Coach mentioned Rodgers, maybe trading for him. That's on the Niners website, 49ers.com. So, and the name of the show or the name of the chat, 49ers Talk. I don't love it. I guess I understand that he is really raw.
Yeah.
So it's best to be prudent rather than hasty, but that's a tough request,
yeah,
man.
But look at this, BT. So Trey Lance, I think we first heard about him after 2 seasons ago. So not last season, the season before, and it was really only because he didn't throw an interception. It's like, oh, who's this kid out in North Dakota State? Oh, wait, that's where Carson Wentz went to school? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, oh, cool. Oh, that's a cool story. He wasn't a prospect. Like, he wasn't someone that anyone was looking at least not the lay fan. Maybe the scouts were, but we weren't looking at it going, oh, Trey Lance, he's going to be the next great hot thing in the NFL. It was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's an awesome accomplishment. But then, because of the pandemic and the fact that, you know, we didn't really see a lot of great football, just be honest, in 2020, because it was Alabama and nobody else, right? It was an odd season, and he only played a year. There was no, like, confirmation. There was no, like, okay, Trey Lance, that wasn't a fluke. It was a real thing. But despite that, because he's such a big kid, like 6'4", 220 or so, he's got a great football IQ, he started to rocket up the draft board. And all of a sudden, a guy who, you know, maybe it was a second or third round project, becomes a first round, you know, talent in the 49ers, at least according to Kyle Shanahan, who we heard from a week ago before the, or actually right after the draft, said he was my guy basically for the entire year. Like, all of a sudden he's a top five pick and they traded up to get him, which is risky. Like, it's really risky to do that because you traded all those draft assets to go from where you were sitting at 12, I believe, and get all the way to 3 just for this guy who is going to be your future. Now, if you throw him in right away and he stinks and all of a sudden the fan base is like, dude, what are you guys doing? Jimmy Garoppolo was there. Like, we went to a Super Bowl 2 years ago. You went and got this kid, Trey Lance, who none of us know about. Maybe he's interesting. He's, you know, he's got all the physical tools. He looks the part, but he just can't do it. Like, what are you doing? It becomes damaging to the organization, both the head coach and the general manager and John Lynch. Yeah. And so to sit him, because as Jed York said, he is only 20. He'll be 21 on Sunday.
God, that's amazing.
It's nuts, man. It's hard to even fathom that, right? Young. Seriously.
That's young to be a quarterback. It's one thing to be a point guard.
BT, that's young to be the third overall pick, yeah. And now he's going to make, what, $35 million or something in guaranteed money with his new deal that he's going to – it's just nuts to think about that. Mm-hmm. Talk about the average starting salary of your alma mater.
Oh, my goodness.
He's in a great spot. But I think it'd be a damaging, request if they said you got to play right away. Because then if he fails, BT,
yeah.
That's a failure not just on Trey Lance. It's a failure on Shanahan for finding him and John Lynch for moving up, giving away all those assets and drafting him when you just went to a Super Bowl a couple of years ago. So I think this is smart. I think it's the only way to go with a guy like Trey Lance.
All right, but let me throw a curveball in here because I'm with you. I mean, I'm not going to camp with an open competition. I don't care if Trey Lance is throwing daggers on the run and he's hitting guys in stride and shorts and, you know, he's showing off, you know, good top end speed at 4.4 change, whatever it is. I don't know exactly what he ran, but I know he's fast. I don't care if he looks the part during practice. He's not playing. But what happens if and or when Jimmy Garoppolo gets hurt again?
Yeah.
Because he always gets hurt.
What
do we do? At that point, that's where I think it gets really interesting. Like,
gets a little dicey.
Yeah, and I don't mean if it's week one or two, then you wouldn't go to Trey Lance. But if we're talking like week 9 or 10 or 11 and, you know, it hurts his ankle, I don't mean anything that, you know, earth shattering.
Yeah, you don't want to wish ill on
for sure.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
No, let me say he tweaks a hammy, right? I mean, if he's in the building for, at that point, 5 months and a couple of months into the regular season, and you still have him third on the depth chart, I think you could still get away with that this year. Next year, you cannot get away with that.
No, you can't. And the San Francisco's depth chart, I just pulled it up and I'm looking at it now, BT. I kind of forgot how interesting it is because it's Jimmy Garoppolo, who's still listed as the starter.
Jimmy!
So Trey Lance is penciled in at number 2. And I agree with you, BT. I think he'll be 3, at least to start the season. Nick Mullins is the third string, likely the backup. But they signed Josh Rosen.
I know they did.
Right? Josh Johnson, remember him?
Of course, from the Bucks, right?
From the Buccaneers for a couple of years and then one of those startup leagues he was in, played pretty well down there. And Nate Sudfeld,
formerly of
Philadelphia. They have a very interesting quarterback room going on right now.
Is it too interesting?
It might be. That's why I'm bringing this up, BT. Yeah. Like, we know what Nick Mullins's ceiling is.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to give it possessive, but you know what I mean. We know
some of those are. Even like when you say Aaron Rodgers is.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, that doesn't sound right, but we know what the ceiling is on Nick Mullins. And I wonder if Josh Rosen's not more interesting. But the problem is that Josh Rosen has had almost no time to become an NFL level quarterback, right? He hasn't really played, and he's how old is he? He's only 24.
Oh, he's a kid.
He just turned 24 in February, and so Josh Rosen is interesting as a potential quarterback and player, not to start in long term, but just interesting to have on the roster. And so, in a way, Josh Rosen and Trey Lance are going to be kind of in the same boat, like learning a new offense and learning how to be an NFL quarterback. And I don't know. They're in a unique spot quarterback-wise, and I didn't realize until I just looked at their depth chart.
I don't love that. First of all, you mentioned Josh Rosen. I don't like that if I'm Josh Rosen.
No doubt. Because
there's no chance to play.
Yeah, he should be somewhere where there's a little bit of doubt in the starter.
Let me see a good spot for Rosen.
There's not a ton of them.
At this point. I hear you.
Yeah, because a lot of teams over the last couple of years have drafted their guy, so to speak.
And let me give you a couple. You ready? Like, if I'm Josh Rosen's agent, I would have tried to steer him to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Houston at this point.
Yep, maybe even Indy.
Indianapolis. Maybe. Maybe. Let's see. The Saints, maybe. Not the Lions. They're going to give Goff a chance to succeed. The Bears, they just made a move for Fields, so not there.
Yeah.
Not the Bengals with Burrow, the Ravens. There's not a ton.
Maybe Philly.
What about the Pats? Didn't you always think that Josh Rosen could be a Belichick kind of guy?
Oh, without a doubt. But
yeah,
not
surprised that never happened.
Not taken, and not if they took Mac Jones. I mean, I know people.
I mean, before this year.
Oh, yeah, yes, right? Yes. Of course. You're talking about before, like, the draft.
Yeah.
All these roster spots got filled with these rookies and these young guys. Absolutely. I mean, that felt like the perfect spot. Honestly, it felt like the perfect spot a couple of years ago when we know that the New England Patriots rarely draft quarterbacks in the first round. In fact, it had been years. Now, they didn't have to, but they always go with, like, let me draft a tight end or a running back or a linebacker in the first round. So getting Mac Jones in the first round is unique for New England.
Yeah.
But Josh Rosen, before this year, he felt like he could have been viable somewhere like that had a good offensive structure that he would learn because, you know, he's a smart kid.
Yeah, borderline brilliant kid.
Yeah,
very
exactly.
Smart.
You know, even sometimes too smart by half when you come to football.
Maybe.
But still, I'm interested to see where he goes. And I don't know if San Francisco is the right place for him, given all the dynamics that they now have in that quarterback room.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, I sent you guys this story on Slack. We have a couple of minutes here. I want to throw this at you. This is pretty interesting. We talk about Justin Fields and the Bears, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I read, the Bears have been playing at Soldier Field since 1971, but that's something that could be changing in the near future.
Really?
The Bears are apparently thinking about relocating to Arlington Heights, and for those not familiar with the, you know, inner workings of Chicago, it's about 30 miles a suburb outside of Chicago, right? So if you think about the mileage, truth of the matter is it's not really that dissimilar from what the 49ers did going from Candlestick, although really out to Santa Clara is more like 42, 43 miles.
This takes an hour.
Yeah, it does. I mean,
remember that? Remember that crawl we went on? We went out there for the Super Bowl.
That was the worst.
Oh, it was horrible.
I loved it. We had a great time at the Super Bowl. I remember me and Sam were in an Uber coming home. First of all, it took forever just to get the Uber, and it was such a long ride back, man.
Yeah.
It was way too long. But they are thinking about bouncing. Let's see. The allure of Arlington Heights comes from the fact that the city's about to have 326 acres available where a new stadium could be built.
Interesting.
The land's currently occupied by the Arlington Park Racetrack, but that building's likely going to be sold in the coming months with the expectation that the new buyer is going to tear it down and redevelop. And in an interview last week, Arlington Heights Mayor Tom Hayes said the Bears, quote, were seriously considering a move to the site.
Yeah, wow.
That's interesting.
There's one thing, and Sam, to just drop this in, it makes this a little bit difficult. 13 years left for the Bears on their current Soldier Field lease. I mean, they obviously could break it.
Money talks,
right?
That is a lengthy lease. I didn't realize it was 13.
It's a long time. But Soldier Field, I mean, I don't even think I realized it because it feels like they went through some, like, renovations.
Oh, they went through major, massive.
I think it was cosmetic, and then they had a big renovation in 2003. So even then, it's been 18 years, and it only seats 61,000.
It's small.
Yeah.
For a city like Chicago, which I think is like fourth or fifth biggest, something like that, in America, and it's a top 10 market. You know, I remember, I remember the Jets and I remember the Lions when I was working in Detroit. Both of those teams played, and other teams did too, when the Bears had their home games in Champaign where Illinois plays. Mm,
that's right.
While they were doing those refurbishments.
That's right.
And the new Soldier looks great.
It does.
One of the most unique stadiums.
But small.
It is small because they've got like those white pillars which are aesthetically awesome. Almost looks like a Roman Coliseum more than a football stadium. I don't know. You know, structurally, and you get to some of those older stadiums, it doesn't matter what kind of coat of paint you put on there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the inner workings. It's the infrastructure. I'm not sure if it's that or if there's just a great deal to be had on a plot of land that's over 300 acres.
Yeah.
And well, they want you. And well, you get you know, a sweetheart deal.
Well, you know how this is now, BT, with these stadiums. It's why Jerry Jones built AT&T, Jerry World down there. It's why Steve Ross in Miami went the Hard Rock route. They want to control the land around the stadium and create like this economic and zone that obviously brings in more money and tenants and et cetera that they now have a piece of. So you can't do that when you're in the middle of the city. You move out to Arlington Heights, there's space and there's an opportunity for something much larger than just football games on eight Sunday afternoons.
You know, I'm looking at this now and I wonder if there's any other teams within, let me see, within the next 10 years or so that could be plotting a move, either out of necessity or just a greener pasture.
Well, Jacksonville's the one we always talk about.
Yeah, because maybe London.
Because of the London thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard. Like, I never thought St. Louis would go, but they obviously, because of the stadium situation, they bounced. So it can happen. I'm running through all the teams. I'm looking now.
Miami's set. Buffalo's set. Pats are set. Jets are set. Dallas, Giants, Eagles, Washington set. Ravens, I would never disrespect Cincinnati that way, but
yeah,
there have been a lot. I know Burrow's there now. There's been a lot of empty seats there for a long time.
Yep.
But that's a staple franchise.
And it's probably because of the production.
The play.
Lack of play. Production on the field.
Lions are staying put. I like Ford Field. Packers, Vikings, Texans, Colts are set. Jags are one. Tennessee seems fairly set. They have a nice thing going there. Tennessee's hopping.
Yep. And that's relatively new, too. So,
Yep. We were there for the draft a couple of years ago. Nice, decent stadium.
Yeah.
Atlanta, beautiful stadium. Mercedes, we were there for the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. Carolina seems set. New ownership, right?
Mm-hmm.
New coach. Saints, the Superdome. They're a staple. Tampa's pretty set. You know, it's funny. If Brady hadn't gone to Tampa and they didn't just win and there wasn't all this positive energy, the Tampa Bay Bucks, and you would know a lot better because of Rondé, but like the Tampa Bay Bucks have really struggled with their revenue stream.
Yeah, they have.
A lot of empty seats over the years.
I don't want to say fan interest because I think there is fan interest, but there's not like that urgency.
No.
And part of it's because people come from everywhere else. You know what I mean? It's like a lot of New Yorkers down there, a lot of, you know, snowbirds that come down and they live there when they retire and they're not necessarily a fan of the team. But when Tom Brady comes and there's all these stars now on the squad, interesting individuals, you become a piece of the community. And I think that's what's happened. So Bruce Arians coming over, bringing Tom Brady and Gronk and a Super Bowl championship. That's a big deal for them economically.
Oh, my God. That plants seeds. And not only is it the seeds, but it's good soil, it's water, and it's sunshine as well. That's going to sprout. I mean, residually, that could have a 10-year impact.
No doubt.
Because young Buck fans who weren't really big Buck fans, now they're Buck fans. I mean, the residual from that championship is hard to quantify. They needed it, too.
Agreed.
All right, T, coming up, Willie Mays, the great Willie Mays. He's 90 today. We talk a lot about LeBron and Kareem and Jordan, obviously, the great Jordan, the GOAT. But let's set the record straight with baseball. Is Willie Mays truly the GOAT, the Say Hey Kid? We'll talk about that next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. So, happy birthday to Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid. Here's the pitch to Vic Wirtz. It's driven out deep to center field. Mays tracking track. Oh, what a grab by Willie Mays. The 54 World Series where he catches it over his shoulder. And I've said a lot. Listen, to me, the best, and you can make a case I think that's the most popular great catch of all time in Major League history. I don't think when you look at degree of difficulty, it's anywhere near the greatest catch of all time. But that's not the point.
Yeah. Bo Jackson running up the wall.
Oh,
maybe.
God. Bo Jackson running up the wall. Ozzie Smith did some things that weren't human.
Dude.
There was the catch by, why am I forgetting his name? Outfielder for the Angels. Jeez, a lefty. Edmonds, who made that sick catch in the outfield when he just laid out, I mean, fully extended, fully parallel to the ground with his back to home plate. When he was with the Angels, one of the, I think to me, that's up there. You can make a case, Freddie Lynn, that play by Freddie Lynn back in the day in what he was that in Baltimore? Or maybe he was in California, smashed into the right center field wall and just made an incredible play. I mean, really, baseball, the home runs are amazing, but the baseball defensive plays, to me, Brooks Robinson in the World Series, Greg Nettles in the World Series. I mean, I could do this all day. The point is, on that play with Willie Mays, I thought the throw was more impressive than the catch myself.
Yeah, because he turned and just whipped it right where it needed to be without even like sighting it. He just turned and threw.
Correct. I mean, his IQ to know where he was throwing. Now, okay, we all know that stories have a tendency to be embellished, right, over time. But if there's anybody I'm going to believe in this world, I'm going to believe my dad, all right? And my dad grew up in Brooklyn like I did. He's still there. God bless him. Dodger fan, so you know he loved 1955. And he was at, well, he'd go all the time. He'd sneak into Ebbets Field. That was when you could sneak in, or, you know, the cops or this concession guy, the usher would look the other way. All right, come on, kid. Go ahead, watch the game. Just a totally different generation. Like, you didn't have to get scanned 9,000 times and go through metal detectors to go watch a baseball game.
Yeah.
The world was a little safer and a little bit more pure.
You could sneak in if you really knew how to.
You can sneak in. Yep. And my dad told me, and I'm going to take him at his word, the Dodgers were playing the Giants. Not at the Polo Grounds, but this was at Ebbets Field. And there was a sinking line drive. And to this day, my dad was pretty young. He forgets who the runner on third base was. But the Dodgers were hitting. Willie's in center field. And there's a looping, kind of like a little bit of a humpback, fading soft liner to center field. All right?
Mm-hmm.
What Willie did, first of all, he was as quick as anybody. He charges it, you know, deftly. But rather than catch the ball with his mitt and transfer it to his hand and try to throw the guy out at home plate tagging up, Willie instead caught it with his bare hand, okay, and was able to, without stopping, like just in one motion, throw a dime to the dish, and the runner on third, who my dad forgets who it was forced to hold up.
Yeah, that's the athleticism inside of it. That I think it was rare when he was playing, you know what I mean? Like in the 1950s.
Well, Mickey was a great athlete. Mickey was a great athlete until he ruined his knee again in the World Series on the drain. But no, Willie was like Griffey back then. He really was, T.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't scaling fences because the fences back then were 460 feet away, number one. They were higher. A lot of the fences were higher. And as the great Willie Mays turns 90 today, you know, I've said for a long time.
1931. I'm just looking at this. It's amazing. This is just a long time ago, man.
1930. Two years after the Depression.
Yeah.
Think about that. Born 2 years after the Depression. I'm so happy to have worked in San Francisco. Had a chance to shake his hand. You know, fourth and king. You know, Willie Mays, the statue right in front of where the Giants play. I forget the name of whatever their naming rights are now. But when I was there, AT&T, before that, Monster.com, whatever it is now. But I have said for my money that the greatest all-around player in the history of baseball is Willie Mays. I've always said that.
Yeah, and that's a debate. Like, people want to throw in the comparisons with Babe Ruth, who was the other legendary player. Obviously, he was significantly before his time. And you look at the stats, they're favorable. Obviously, Babe has whatever it is, you know, I forget how many of this, 54? Yeah, 54 more home runs. But you talk about Willie's athleticism. I mean, the stolen base numbers, 338 stolen bases and like all that athleticism, that fielding acumen that you talked about, that you can't put a price on that, man. It was as important sometimes, especially back in that era.
Yes.
As scoring runs, you know, the difference is, I didn't realize this. Babe Ruth, because I did a comparison on Baseball Reference between Willie Mays and Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth had a significantly less number of at-bats than Willie Mays.
I think, what did Ruth have, about 8,000 at-bats, something 8, like that?
8,000, almost 8,400.
So 8, and what did Willie have?
He had 10,881.
That's interesting.
Babe Ruth scored 114 more runs, right? He was just and I guess a lot of that is the home runs. You get 54 home runs, and you're on base a little bit more. He's a prolific doubles hitter as well, as well as triples, Babe Ruth. So he was an athlete, but not like Willie Mays was.
No.
But the batting numbers, they line up. Despite being having less opportunities than Willie Mays.
I mean, I just typed up, you know, Babe's stats. I mean, you're looking at one point, you know, 170 RBIs, 142.
Yeah.
I mean, 144.
In a season. Sick. That's sick.
150, 145, 137. You know, Babe can run a little bit despite the roundness to his body. Mm-hmm. He's had some years early on when he would run, you know, mid-teen stolen bases. See, the thing about Ruth, I can make the case that – certainly Babe Ruth was the first great player.
Yeah.
And I can make the case that Babe Ruth is the most iconic baseball player of all time. I am comfortable saying that Willie Mays is the most talented player of all time. And, you know, listen, there's no right or wrong answer for sure. There's no doubt about that. I think I dig in deeper with the whole Jordan-LeBron stuff because, number one, I saw them both.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw Kareem, or you and I saw Kareem. Granted, you know, yep. Not with the Bucks, the second half of his career, but we at least saw him. I mean, we didn't see these guys play.
No.
But the thing, you know, and listen, we don't incorporate race when you don't have to. Like, but this has to be said. You know, Babe Ruth playing against all white guys.
Yeah, it's true. They weren't allowed in the league, even though black players were around.
Well, they were around pre-1900. In the 1880s, there were a handful.
Yeah.
But when Babe Ruth came up in 1913 or 1914.
Yeah. No, I don't even mean in the league. I mean, they were around, but they were playing in their own league.
Oh, exactly.
In the Negro League.
For sure.
So it's not
for sure.
Oh, there was just no black players playing baseball. That's just not true.
Correct. Right. But there was also no Spanish players.
That's right.
I mean, Clemente wound up coming. I mean, it's, you know, some of these, Juan Marichal, one of the great pitchers. There's no right or wrong answer, but I think when I think of pure artistry, you know, Willie Mays is just is the vision because he had power. Mm-hmm. He can swipe a bag. He go get it in center field as good as anybody. He had a good arm. Truly a five-tool guy. You could also say that, you know, I mean, Babe Ruth was doing things, hitting home runs. Babe Ruth had more home runs himself in a season than teams had combined.
Yeah, that's right.
So there was this, like, superhero-ish quality to Babe.
Yeah, at least Casey at the bat, man.
Casey at the bat, yeah.
Casey at the bat. And by the way, he came through in the World Series. He's got seven titles. So, I mean, he was the man.
Oh, yeah, he also had Lou Gehrig hitting, too. Yeah, I mean, Lou Gehrig was in that lineup, not to mention a bunch of – but no. I mean, Willie Mays didn't always have that kind of talent. Well, nobody had talent like the 27 Yankees.
No.
But, I mean, you look at some of those old Yankee – if you put Willie Mays next to Lou Gehrig or Willie Mays next to Babe Ruth, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, but he also won three titles in Boston.
Who's this now? A Babe.
Babe, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about this, Teak. In a lot of ways, you know, Shohei Ohtani, Babe Ruth was Shohei Ohtani, only better.
Interesting, yeah, because he
was the best slugger in the game, and he was the best pitcher for a little bit.
Didn't he win a title, like an ERA title one year? I think he did.
With the Red Sox. Listen, he pitched, you know, the first couple of years.
Yeah, he did. I'm looking at it now. 1.75 BG in 1916.
Let me see. How old was he in 1916?
He was 21. He was a baby, relatively speaking.
Here we go. Okay, I got it. So, how about this? This is what's crazy, though. In 1916, he made 40 starts, and it wasn't even a 162-game season.
That's crazy.
Now, you know, if you're fully healthy and you're at the top of the rotation, you generally get 32, 33 starts. So,
yeah.
So let me see. The year that
40
he made...
40 starts with 9 shutouts.
Man, that's true. How many complete games? 23 of the 40, he went the distance. Well, how about this? He couldn't have had many. How many at-bats did he have in 1916? This is important. I got it here. In 1916, he only had 152 plate appearances. He walked 136 at-bats. So, you know, the first 5 years of his career, granted, he was young. So, you know, I'm not saying he would hit 50 home runs, but whatever he did statistically, if you want to say that I'm wrong, that I think that Willie Mays is the best of all time, you can make a case, well, whatever numbers Ruth put up, it may have been, you know, arguably 7-9% more if he wasn't pitching.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like the first five years of his career, he was primarily a pitcher. And then he started getting 500 plate appearances in 19 and led the league in hits and home runs for year after year after year after year after year.
Unbelievable. Wow. Yeah, both of these guys.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that Willie Mays was the better player, given but it was a different, completely different era. It's apples to oranges in a way.
Yeah, and you leave out somebody like Hank Aaron, invariably, who we lost this year, unfortunately, the great Hank Aaron. Somebody like that is kind of overlooked. He shouldn't be because he's the home run champ. You know, he's got the most RBIs in the history of the game, etc. Somebody like Ty Cobb, Ted Williams, to me, the greatest pure hitter of all time. Tony Gwynn, the second greatest pure hitter. Somebody like Rogers Hornsby, the great Stan Musial, Joe DiMaggio, who retired early. I mean, these are titans of the game.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fox, Mickey Mantle, Clemente, Frank Robinson. We can do this all day.
Yeah,
the bottom line is happy birthday to the great Willie Mays.
Yeah, this is a good stat that Samter put up here. Willie, he had 300 stolen bases. 91 other players in Major League Baseball at that point had 300 stolen bases when he got to 300, right?
Uh-huh.
None of them had over 160 home runs. Willie had 660 home runs.
Oh, that paints a really good picture of the disparity in power and athleticism
yep.
that he had versus the rest of the league.
Yep.
That's a good one, too. That's a good one. All right, T. Again, 90 years young for the great Say Hey Kid, who I have definitely had the chance to meet. Shake hands. For the record, could be a little grumpy. That's the word. I mean, that is the word on the street about Willie Mays over the years.
Dude, you're 90 years old. You're grumpy about something.
But even in his 50s and 60s.
Yeah, I hear you.
But you know what? To be fair, Willie Mays had a lot to be unhappy about if you think about when he grew up.
That's a great point.
Let's be fair.
Great point.
Thank you, Teek. Let's get the update. Erica Herskowitz has that. Teek and I will come back. We'll bang out the blast. Been a great show. Hersky, then the blast. Now, here's Erica. I told you the Knicks were going to lose last night, Teek. I just knew it. I knew it. What a weird game, too. Oof. One of those watching that in the first, like, literally 20 seconds into the game, Barrett gets whistled for two fouls. Noel gets another foul. The Knicks got – now, listen, I don't think they were going to win anyway, but the Knicks had three fouls in, like, the first 36 seconds. Thibodeau got teed up. They missed three dunks. It was the strangest start to a game I've seen in a long time. I really was. And, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm like, under no circumstances do I think they're going to mount the rally, even though I never rule them out
because
they play their behinds off. But from the tip, you knew that that wasn't going well. Nice job by Joker, though. Played very well. He had like 16 points in the first quarter.
Your 2020-2021 MVP.
Yes.
Nikola Jokic.
The Joker. Oh, he's got it wrapped up. There's no doubt about that. Good stuff today. We had A.J. Hawk on the show, former teammates with Aaron Rodgers. So if you want to get some thoughts on that, we obviously poked and prodded and pushed as much as we can. We squeezed a little out of him. Just go check it out, odyssey.com or youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. Tiki is out tomorrow, so I'll go solo. Right now, I think we're banging the blast. You ready to go? See what we got?
Let's do it, my
let's
partner.
Hit it. Yeah, let's hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right. According to sources, though, it's been somewhat refuted by the Lions. They said they really haven't made their decision yet, but there's enough smoke there that you would imagine this will come to fruition. The Lions will release running back Kerryon Johnson, soon to be 24. He's young, second-round pick. A couple of years ago, he's seen his touches decrease since his rookie season. Just 52 a year ago. Are teams too quick to give up on running backs in today's NFL?
Well, I don't think they're too quick. I think if you don't pop in the first couple of years, then you're just very easily replaced. There's so much depth in the college game with running backs, and they come in all different shapes and sizes and skills, whether it's a bruiser or whether it's a scat-type player or someone who's all-purpose. It's easy to find replacement running backs if you haven't popped off the screen and shown your worth right away, like, say, Zeke Elliott or Christian McCaffrey or even Saquon Barkley before he got hurt.
I got to tell you, I think this guy got a bit of a raw deal out there in Detroit. And if I'm Miami, I'm going after him. I'm not saying he's going to be a superstar. But, you know, listen, for the Lions who were going nowhere, to have Adrian Peterson, to me, was a complete waste of time. Myself, think, you know, all due respect to AP, but...
Yeah, love AP, but I agree with you, BJ.
You know, what is that? Kenyon, Kerryon, but we had him on the show, too. Swift.
Oh, yeah, DeAndre Swift.
Yep,
yeah.
They obviously like him, and so do we. But his rookie year, so you go back to the 2018 season, he only started 7 games. He ran for 650 yards, well over 5 yards a carry. He had, you know, a couple of touchdowns. He caught 30-something passes, 32 out of 39 receptions on target. So his catch rate was pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, then he just got completely banished. And I don't know what the story was. It wasn't like he had a ton of fumbles. He only had one.
I think it was some injuries.
All right.
You get a little injury nicked up and you don't come back from it quickly.
Yeah.
Then you're injury prone. It's not true. Somebody's going to steal him, BT.
Seriously. Oh, the Dolphins. The Dolphins need, we talked about the Dolphins running attack.
Yep.
If I'm Miami, I'm going all in on him here. I think he's going to resurface, and I think he's going to surprise. I would not bury Kerryon Johnson, is what I'm saying.
Agreed.
All right, Zeke, we discussed yesterday LaMelo Ball's viability to win Rookie of the Year despite missing a big chunk of time with a fractured wrist. But number one overall pick Anthony Edwards has played in all 66 games, and he had his second 40-plus scoring game of the season last night against the Grizz. So How would we describe his rookie season? It's getting more and more encouraging as the season goes on, that's for sure. You know, he was a big-time athlete coming out of school. It was one of those, well, is there truly a consensus first overall pick? We thought he would be the guy. We weren't surprised on draft night, but leading up to the draft, maybe a couple of months before the draft, and certainly during the college season, you know, there was enough debate whether or not Edwards was worthy of the first overall pick. I don't think he's ever going to be the kind of player that you build a championship team around as the number one guy, where I think maybe LaMelo Ball could be that player. He's that good.
Yeah.
But Edwards, quite frankly, is a little bit better than I thought he'd be.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, I remember we talked about him coming out of Georgia, like how well he could shoot. Like, this kid could knock it down. And he hasn't necessarily been that. It's 41% from the field, 33% from three-point range. And, again, that was early struggles for a kid who's just young. I mean, he's 19 years old. You know what I mean? It's like we don't think about that sometimes. You're a kid playing with some grown-ass men and getting adjusted to being in a new place. Obviously, in Minnesota, you grew up in Georgia, went to school in Georgia. I think he's from Georgia, actually, as well. He went to Holy Spirit Prep School down in Georgia, went to school in Georgia, and all of a sudden you're in Minnesota, right, as a 19-year-old. It's just a lot of adjustments, mm-hmm. and you hope his game doesn't continue to be inconsistent. But I would say inconsistent, but trending in the right direction.
Okay. All right, last night Atlanta blew out the Suns, beat them by basically 30, 135-103, with the Hawks getting at least 13 points from 7 different players. Great balance on the stat sheet. And the team outscored the Suns 38-15 in the fourth and decisive quarter, so they ran away from them. More impressive for Atlanta or concerning for the Suns?
I'm going to say more impressive for Atlanta. You know, Atlanta has been one of those teams. We've talked about them, you know, extensively after Nate McMillan took over as the head coach, and how disciplined they've become, and, you know, less ISO dominant for some of these players, in particular, Trae Young. And so I think this is an impressive win for Atlanta over a team who has been really good. We were talking about them yesterday, how dominant they seem to be coming and sit at the top of the Western Conference. So kudos to Atlanta, even though they were at home for this game. So you should win these games, but not necessarily like this against a very good team.
Absolutely, that's the right answer. Definitely much more impressive for Atlanta than disconcerting for the Suns. Suns have been a terrific story. I mean, everybody's going to have one of those nights, especially on the road, 3,000 miles-ish away. You know, Phoenix is going to win 50 games this year in a condensed season. No worries about Phoenix. I think what was more important, not only did they destroy the Suns, but they held the high-octane offense to only 103 points. So it was double impressive. They smoked them, and they also didn't let them do anything offensively. I think they shot only 41%. Outside of Booker, nobody really did much. Chris Paul had a rough night shooting the rock. Big-time performance by Atlanta. Kudos to them. Not alarmed by any stretch from Phoenix's point of view. All right. I mentioned this finishing up the show yesterday. After yesterday's 1-0 extra inning loss to the Reds, the White Sox sent their relief pitcher to be the runner on second. And manager Tony La Russa admitted he didn't realize the caveat in the rule book said that they could substitute a position player for the pitcher in that scenario.
You have to use the guy who made the last out. And that was Vaughn, not Abreu. Vaughn made the last out.
The rule book, the MLB.com said, if the player in the batting order immediately preceding the half innings leadoff hitter is the pitcher, the runner placed on second base may be the player preceding the pitcher in the batting order. Did like the umps explain anything like that? Or?
Well, you know, I didn't know that. We all thought that Liam was going to be the runner, and that's why I wanted there, because if you wanted a double switch to keep him in the game, if you look at all, you know, Abreu back to Moncada and so forth, that's not who you want to double switch out of the game. I wasn't aware that Abreu could have run. I thought it had to be the guy who made the last out.
All right. That's pretty candid there. It doesn't sound good. Is this mistake unforgivable or understandable considering the situation? You got to know the rule, man.
Yeah.
I mean, is it understandable? Not really. I mean, is it unforgivable? Sure. No, it's not unforgivable, although it looks bad. But it's certainly not understandable. Your job is to – listen, you can't control if guys are throwing strikes or, you know, if guys are hitting them where they aren't, you certainly can control what you know in the rule book there.
Yeah.
Come on. You got to know the rules.
Yeah, but this also can't just be all on Tony La Russa.
I agree, but he's the manager. No, he's got to have a coach coming up and saying, Skip, what are we doing here?
Coach and,
absolutely. Good point.
I mean, I get it because he's older, obviously, but that's not an excuse.
No, it's not.
And so, but somebody should have been out there, you know, telling them, yeah, you don't have to put the pitcher out there. You know, it's the guy before if it is the pitcher. I mean, it's a nuance to that rule, which, I mean, I kind of am okay with. I don't love it, the guy on second rule.
Yep.
He probably just didn't think about it. Like, like the chances of that happening, the pitcher being the last out, it's rare.
It's not the first week in spring training. You went through the entire spring. You're in May. You've played 30 games. You got to know the rule.
True.
And you got to know the rule.
He is 76 and been out of coaching.
I don't care if he's 46. You got to know the rule.
Been out of coaching for a decade. Last time he was there, Cardinals won a World Series.
He's one of the three greatest managers of all time. You still got to know the rule. I mean, you have to know the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. You got to know the rule.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Let's check on our boy Phil, see if
he's still so top, BT. Seven.
Ooh, he finished minus seven.
He did.
He's
leader in the clubhouse right now, Phil Mickelson.
He is. Phil Mickelson. We have a new golfer on tour. His name is Phil Mickelson.
Exactly. It's like, who is this guy you're talking about?
By the way, how about the sunglasses Phil started wearing about a year ago?
I know.
The chip sunglasses from the 1970s.
I don't know what that's all about.
Maybe
he's trying to be young. Maybe he's trying to throw back something. Who knows?
I don't know what he's doing, but whatever he's doing today, he's spinning it right on the greens, and I'm sure he's pounding it because he's still pretty long.
I'm watching
seven.
It right now.
Nice.
It looks beautiful out there.
Oh, God.
It just makes you wish, just pine. Couldn't I just be a golfer, man?
I've thought that so many times. Jeez, I can't tell how many times I've thought that. Let's see. He only has one bogey on the card. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 birds. No eagles. Two shots up. We're going to get a little Phil on CBS this weekend. Awesome.
That's right.
Teak, have a great day off tomorrow, buddy. Handle
Appreciate
business.
You, Appreciate
do what you got to do. You know what I mean?
No doubt about it, brother.
I love it. I'll hear about it, I'm sure. Enjoy it. I'm solo tomorrow. Everybody have a great Thursday night. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.